You're listening to Shared Security, a podcast that explores the trust you put in people and technology. Hosted by Tom Esten, Scott Wright, and Kevin Johnson. We talk a lot about the importance of multi-factor authentication on this podcast, but why does multi-factor authentication have to be such a pain for users? Well, I have some good news for you. It doesn't. Beyond Identity is the most secure MFA on the market and the easiest to use. Beyond Identity ensures that every authentication is multi-factor by default, with only phishing-resistant factors to secure access from the start. To find out more about Beyond Identity, go to beyondidentity.com/podcast to get a free demo today. Welcome to episode 286 of the Shared Security Podcast, and joining me live from the land of maple syrup, co-host Scott Wright.
Hey, I got mine right here.
And oh, sure you do. There it is. Yep. Also joining me from the land of alligators, beautiful beaches, and Florida man, co-host Kevin Johnson.
I love the fact that he listed all the things that, you know, are outside, which is something I don't do. By the way, we're rearranging stuff at the house. We're cleaning stuff up. We're doing all this stuff. And I found one of my favorite stickers. So I thought I would share it here.
Oh, that's a great sticker.
Put Kevin back.
And it's not put Kevin Johnson back.
No, not Kevin Johnson.
Which Kevin are we talking about here?
Kevin Mitnick.
I found the sticker and I thought, okay, that's funny. I'm going to bring it. And especially since I will point out, not that there's any that Kevin Mitnick happens to work with somehow, a company that may or may not compete with ClickArmor. And I say may or may not because, in the industry, I do know. And here's the answer. They don't really compete because they suck. But
I thought it was something about Kevin Costner and getting snubbed at the Emmys, but that's okay.
I want him back in Postman. I read that book. That book was awesome. The movie was not so much. The movie was as if somebody read the description of the book and then told somebody else what the book was about, and that person wrote the script.
Telephone postman.
Yeah. Scott, I got a question that might seem irrelevant, but I have a rant.
Okay. And I'll be very careful in answering it.
Yeah. I warned Tom I was going to rant. Are you a member of ISC Squared?
Not anymore.
But you were.
I was.
And Tom, you are, right?
Yes, I am currently a member, but I'm questioning my membership.
Oh, I'm not questioning my membership. I'm going to stay a member because I believe very firmly. So here's my question, Scott.
Yes.
As a maple-loving Canadian, I guess, if I said to you that recently, as of, you know, maybe an hour ago,
yes,
the board of ISC Squared had released the candidates to run to be on the board, but they were described as the board-approved slate of candidates. Okay. Would you think that might be a conflict of interest, that the board approves the slate of candidates that get to run to be on the board with a set of criteria that may or may not be, is not actually public to anybody? Would you have an issue with that?
I would like to know what was the approval based on, what criteria.
Mm-hmm. I can see that.
Unknown.
Me personally, I'm bothered that there's an approval process by the board to run for the board. Like, that's a good old boy network.
Like, what if Kevin Mitnick wanted to run for the board?
Well, I would argue that Kevin Mitnick violates the canons of the ethics, but I'm not the person who makes that decision.
So you would allow him to be on the ballot?
I would allow anybody who met the criteria. And my understanding is the criteria are things like you have to be an adult, you have to be a current member of ISC Squared, right? So in you have to be a member in good standing, things like that. Those are the type of criteria I'd be okay with. Like, like have to be, have the credential of being a member of ISC Squared. I could even be okay with you have to be a member for 2 years minimum. Like, so that, like, if you got your CISP today and became a member, you couldn't immediately run for the board. I could see that. I could see that. But yeah, I feel like it feels underhanded. And this came up because yesterday on Facebook, Erin Jacobs, I don't know if you know Erin, Sex Barbie was what she went by. If you don't know Erin, by the way, you should know Erin. She is one of the best people in the industry. She's amazing. I love her to death. She was rejected from running to be on the board.
Interesting.
And that tells me that the criteria are messed up. Because if somebody who is as involved as Erin, who is as respected as Erin, who is as qualified and skilled as Erin, is rejected, what friggin' losers are you?
I'm actually looking at the thing that she posted on Twitter saying I tried.
And we'll link that in the show notes.
It's interesting. Yeah. The response looks like it was a rejection from a conference CFP.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's an excellent way to put it. Yeah. It just blows my mind. And I know I apologize because this is not part of our agenda, but it made me so angry last night. I mean, like, literally fuming angry. ISC Squared is supposed to be, and we could argue whether or not people think of it this way, whatever, right? But it's supposed to be the standard we hold InfoSec people to. That's how they present themselves. We can argue whether or not they really are or anything else like that. But they present, they've gone to SHRM, the Society of HR Managers, the DOD lists ISC Squared as one of the standards to hold cybersecurity people to.
Right? For the record, I'm not a member of ISC Squared. I was, but now I'm a member of ISACA, CISA.
Okay. Yeah. Same
idea. Yeah.
Yeah. But here is an organization that worldwide is supposed to be held up as the gold standard for what we want to hold cybersecurity people to, for ethics and everything else like that. How unethical does it feel to say board approved slate of candidates? And my answer, so that Tom doesn't have to bleep, is screw you, ISC Squared. This pisses, as a member, I'm angry. As a member, I'm furious. And I know I would never pass the criteria the board had to be a board member.
I keep saying you should run.
Yeah, you should run, Kevin.
Well, you can't. You have to ask permission. I have to put my hat in hand and beg for a spot on the board candidacy. Yeah. God, that sucks. Sorry. See, okay, I'll let you guys go back to the agenda.
You can never run now because there's this episode that will be publicly available.
Oh, forget that. I tweeted it. I am ISC Squared Central Florida has me coming down to do a workshop on Saturday. I'm Jason Gillum and I are driving down tomorrow night, and we're going to be teaching a workshop on web testing for ISC Squared Central Florida. And you know for a fact I'm starting that thing out with, y'all are unethical. Not the people, not the members.
Just keep in mind, Kevin, we're both speaking at their Congress at the end.
Yes, I am. Yes.
Anyway.
And I have a booth. We are sponsoring their security Congress.
Even better.
Yeah. Right. Oh, yeah.
We'll have lots
I'm actually thinking about changing our backdrop for Secure Ideas.
Oh, okay. All right.
Okay.
All right.
So let's do our actual agenda.
Do we have an agenda?
Kevin's anger. Yes, we do. Tom does a lot of work to pull this stuff together, and we should respect that.
Well, thank you. And
here's Tom's board-approved agenda.
Yeah. And, well, I do want to say that before we get into the agenda, I do have one announcement that I do want to make, which is I do want to give our monthly supporter shout-out to our first Patreon supporter. Nice. So, Johan, thank you very much. I'll throw in a sound effect.
Okay, good.
So, host, thanks, Johan. Put that in there. Yes, awesome. Thanks, Johan, for being our first Patreon supporter. Much appreciated. We are going to do a small campaign here. So by the end of August, we're hoping to have at least 5 Patreon supporters. So nice. If you would like to become part of this esteemed group of supporters of the podcast,
yes,
you can go to sharedsecurity.net/supporter and find out all the details there.
But, and at 5 supporters, it unlocks the next level.
That's right. That's right. We don't know what that next level is.
We don't know.
But
the next level? Yes. Oh, wait a minute. Oh, man.
It unlocks a new side quest for something. I don't know. But thank you very much, those of you thinking about supporting the show. We would really appreciate it.
Yes.
And now let's go to our first story, which is apparently selling cell phone location data may be banned for the first time in the U.S. in the state of Massachusetts. So there is a bill going through the state Senate there called the Location Shield Act, which is aiming to ban the selling of location data from mobile devices. And this also requires law enforcement to obtain a warrant for access to location data. So this is definitely interesting. And you know how these types of laws, if passed, work in the United States. Usually other states will then copy said bill and also implement them. What do you guys think of this? Is this personally, I think it's a good thing in some aspects.
So I agree with you. I think it's a good thing. I think that selling location data is bad. I think that the one thing that struck me as odd is I thought law enforcement already needed a warrant to get location data from phones.
I think it depends on the context of the request.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. I guess you're right. Cause I'm thinking if we're there investigating a criminal or a potential criminal that they would do it. By the way, we now have 2 Patreons and,
ding, 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 ding,
ding, ding, ding, ding, ding. I thought they already needed it. I've said this before. I am not a fan of regulating things to regulate things. But this is yet another reason why we need a federal privacy law. Because here's a question that I have. Okay, so in Massachusetts, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like I blanked on this. I'm like, wait, that doesn't sound right. So in Massachusetts, they're putting this forward. Let's say it passes. Does it only cover people who are in Massachusetts, or does it only cover people who live in Massachusetts? And then if that person in Massachusetts like travels to Florida,
that's a great question,
right? Like,
yeah, how do you enforce that? Right. Like, because
or does it only enforce against cell phone companies in Massachusetts?
It's very similar to those other bills that are blocking like access to porn sites. Like I think it's Montana, right? That ban
Louisiana, Montana. Right.
Yeah. Something like that. So like, does that apply to visitors of those states as well? Or is it just residents?
So many questions.
How do you enforce something like that? So yeah, there's a lot of questions about that. I think this is a good move because of all the data brokers and the challenges with that, right? I think that's a big reason why they're trying to move forward with this. But
it's interesting. It says the bill faces opposition from the technology industry. Not a big surprise.
Of course.
Which suggests alternative privacy laws, which is kind of what Kevin's saying.
I guess my question is, when they say it's opposed by the technology industry, who?
Yeah.
The lobbyists for the data brokers.
Is it the fintechs or the social medias or the, yeah, yeah.
Right. I would argue that if you're a lobbyist for the data brokers, I already hate you. So I don't care whether you support it or not. But I will bet you that Cisco doesn't care, isn't opposing this. I will tell you that Secure Ideas is not opposing this law. I don't know. I think it's a good way forward. I can't believe I am sitting here saying, oh, yay, good laws.
True.
This is the anarchist. Yeah.
I'm not an anarchist.
No, definitely not an anarchist. Yes.
I don't know what the heck I am.
You're just a Wookiee.
yeah. But make sure you spell it correctly.
Yes.
There's 2 E's.
There are. All right. So let's move on to our favorite segment of the week, which is Aware Much.
Yes, Tom.
I love it.
This installment of Aware Much is brought to you by ClickArmor, the gamified security awareness training platform unlike anything you've seen before. So we saw a great question recently on Reddit about password managers. And it was a simple one. What are the pros and cons of prohibiting the use of password managers in an organization? Mm-hmm. So thinking about this a bit, I get asked this once in a while, and I think there's some interesting observations made in the Reddit thread. You know, a lot of people say, you know, we've seen many company or many security professionals say password managers are a good thing. You know, one of the top five things that people should do for securing their information. But should an organization allow employees to use any password manager that they want? You know, and a policy that you can't enforce isn't necessarily worth that much. And this is one of the cases where you can't really say, don't, you know, I can't enforce you storing your password on a phone or some other device that, you know, the organization has no access to. So, you know, you can have guidelines and you can explain why it's important. But what do you guys think?
Well, I mean, I always say, like, no password manager. I mean, getting a password manager or using a password manager is better than no password manager. But I do see the challenge in a large enterprise if you just let it be a free-for-all. I think that gets into overall management of systems, right? I think, you know, like most companies nowadays, like, either use, you know, not saying LastPass, but maybe they have one password or something else that they issue out to everybody's laptops, right? And install it. And they actually, I know a lot of them have family plans that come with that as well. So the advantage is you can use it for your personal use as well, which I like. The challenge becomes, do you intermingle your personal passwords with your corporate passwords on your corporate laptop? So if you do leave the organization, you know, how, what happens to your personal information?
Yeah. And could you export, you know, you might, if you're using the corporate password manager for your personal passwords and you leave the company, you got to act fast to export them somehow without exporting all the corporate passwords. Right. So that's a little bit tricky.
I think the entire, the very large portion of the question is just incorrectly focused. But hey, should we allow external password managers? My answer is, why aren't you asking, should we allow external software? Right?
It is a bigger question.
Yeah. I think that the fact that this guy, person, lady, whatever, is saying, hey, my organization has no control of the software installed on our devices, is this one very specific piece of software okay? Is overlooking the security problem that they don't have any control of the software that's running there. Now, having said that, let's talk about the password manager aspect, right? Because that is, if we're going to talk about Aware Much, and I can't do the sing-songy thing you guys do, and or I can, I'm not gonna. And, but I think that this is absolutely an awareness problem. And that is either the company has a password manager system they've approved and the person using some external one doesn't know about it. That's an education problem. You're not teaching people. You're not making them aware of it. Or two, they don't have one. And that's an awareness problem in the security team's case, right? Why don't you have one? What's going on here? And three, we have not made it clear to people how to use password managers. Scott, you mentioned, you know, intermingling your corporate passwords, your personal passwords, and then, okay, now you leave the company, you're forced out of the company, you're fired, whatever. How do you segment those, get them, whatever? That is a fundamental awareness problem on how to use the password manager.
Yeah.
I am not aware of a single password manager that does not have support for personal accounts along with professional accounts, right? I know we use Bitwarden here at Secure Ideas. We used to use LastPass. Both when you paid for, as an organization paying for it, when you paid for it, it had the ability to link a personal account to that professional one so that it allowed you to maintain both corporate passwords and personal passwords together. And then if something happened and you left the corporate aspect, you did not lose access to your personal vault, everything else like that. So the fact that intermingling passwords is even a concern tells me the people that have that concern, not you, because I know you know this, you're reiterating the concerns brought up in the thread, right? But the people in the thread, they're like, oh, what about intermingling? Those people are not aware of the actual way to use these things, which again is an education problem. I think the vast majority of these problems are education problems, and we're failing at it. So my fundamental answer is it's the wrong question.
Okay.
But my awareness answer is it's an educational problem. We have to teach people how to use them correctly. We have to pick the right ones. We have to use them and control what's on our network. Sorry.
Yeah, very well said, Kevin. So this installment of Aware Much is brought to you by ClickArmor, the gamified security awareness training platform, unlike anything you've seen before. And at ClickArmor, we recognize that employees are looking for reasons to disengage with awareness training in general. But our platform is built on a game engine, which makes it look and feel much more interactive and enjoyable. So if you're struggling with finding ways to get employees to complete the training, or your employees are just ignoring the death by PowerPoint training that you're giving them now, then you should visit clickarmor.ca and find out how easily you can improve your employee compliance and your organization's security culture. That's it for this installment of Aware Much.
So, our last story of the week.
Sorry, I just giggle.
That's why we do it.
That's why we do it, to make you laugh, Kevin. So, real-time crime centers, if you haven't known this, they have been a big thing in the U.S. Since 2005. So, a lot of people don't know that a lot of, I know major cities have this, like New York or I don't want to say Cleveland. San Francisco, because there's a lot of crime in San Francisco. But besides that, police departments are really trying to consolidate information to get more real-time notice and activities of what's going on in the city related to crime. And so a lot of that is bringing together license plate scanning technology, facial recognition technology, all of these things for what they kind of call predictive policing. So not like the movie Minority Report, right? Where precogs in there. But honestly, I think that's where this is eventually trying to go.
Yeah. Well, it's already in British TV shows, right? I mean, every crime is solved by finding a automatic number plate recognition or facial recognition.
I mean, if you could predict a crime is about to happen, that is definitely an advantage for law enforcement and for, you know, citizens, right? There's a positive thing about this, but obviously this brings a lot of privacy.
Sorry. No,
we can get to that, but I will just say you could look at this as something positive from a regular citizen that feels I need to be protected, and I want the police to know that there are crimes that are about to happen. So that may make some people feel a little bit safer, but we know that there are pretty massive privacy concerns with this of like, what happens to all this data? What happens, you know, when someone is identified maybe incorrectly? Yeah. We talk a lot on the show about the facial recognition doesn't do a great job detecting minorities. It incorrectly identifies minorities and other ethnicities.
And the no-fly lists.
There's big problems with this. So I don't know. What do you guys think? Is this something that we're going to continue to see?
So I linked in. The answer is yes, of course, we're going to continue to see it because our leaders are jerks and in it for their own financial well-being. I just linked in the chat here, and you're welcome to either use it or not. There was a thread I was reading yesterday about various stories of civil forfeiture. And when you read through it, the various stories are, you know, somebody's driving, they're accused of a crime by law enforcement, and law enforcement seizes their assets. Notice I did not say convicted. I also didn't say charged with a crime. Mm. These stories were people accused of. The cop pulled them over, said, hey, you're breaking the law. Let me take your car. And it talks about the seminars that they've had in the law enforcement communities about what are the good things to take in civil forfeiture. And they, like, flat screen TVs are very popular. And so it may not seem relevant, but here's the issue. When we focus on privacy issues, which we do, and I would hope that anybody listening to this podcast knows that I am a huge opponent to anything that is violating privacy of people, even though I personally live my life as if everything's public. I'm a huge opponent of law enforcement doing things that will come across and ultimately react to less rights for citizens, less ability for free speech. When you have a center that its entire purpose is to monitor the real-time crimes going on, you will never convince me that that is not going to be abused, that that is not going to be absolutely used to focus attention on the other, whatever the other happens to be that day. And I come from a state, Florida, where we have a governor right now who is so ridiculously, horribly evil. And you're going to turn over to a, I won't even call him a man because, and I'm trying very hard not to have you have edit things again.
Thank you.
And I'm struggling. But the next step, and I understand how many people say, oh, the slippery slope thing. But here's the reality. We've seen it time and time and time again. Here's, ask me how many of these real-time crime centers are focused on the rich white neighborhoods. Ask me how many of these crime centers aren't outside of the LGBT club that they're worried about. Ask me how many of these crime centers aren't focused on invading the privacy and rights of the disadvantaged and minority. And the answer is none. None of them aren't focused on that. So this idea, I get the idea. And that's why I say it. And I know, Tom, that you were not saying, oh, this is a great idea.
When no. I'm just...
I understand the idea that, oh, we have to protect ourselves from crimes. Yes, we have to protect ourselves from crimes. I would love it if the police's job was to protect and serve. But when you watch the court judges, when you watch what the rulings are, the police's job is not to protect and serve. The police's job is to enforce laws and collect money for the state. And all this is doing is focusing on minorities and collecting money for the state. Sorry, it makes me angry. I read the article and I almost wrote back to you and said, hey, Tom, you may not want this one in the RC show.
But I always have to add something, right?
We need some diversity. You know,
I mean, stir up some controversy. So
disgusting.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Well, you know, that is, I think, it's interesting you mentioned just to protect and serve, right? And I think I had read something once that police actually have no obligation to protect you.
No, like, they don't. Legally. The courts have come out and said the police aren't there to protect you, no matter what their slogan says, because there have been lawsuits. And let me be very clear. I have friends who are cops. I know many people
that are
cops. Yeah. There are people I care about and like and think are doing a good job. This is not an anti-all cops are bad type crud thing. All I'm saying is law enforcement has been used as a blunt hammer to undermine rights and destroy communities. And this idea is just that in real time. So, yeah.
It's interesting. I'll add a little international flavor to this. Yes. So as you were talking, I was thinking, gee, that's interesting. I wonder if we have any real-time crime centers stuff in Canada, right? So I did a Google search and I don't know where they are. I didn't have time to look at if and when or where they exist, but I did find a conference all about, real-time crime centers. Operations and Tech Integration. It's a two-day conference, and not one of the sessions in that 2 days is dedicated to privacy, except the last one is Time to Call My Lawyer, the Role of Legal Counsel.
Yep.
Interesting.
Yeah. Very interesting. Yeah. We'll see where all this evolves, but great points, Kevin, as always.
I don't know about it as always.
Even in the midst of controversy. Yes. So I think that's all we have time for this week. But thank you both, as always, for joining me as my sexy co-hosts.
Ooh. Is that the intro next week?
No, this was from last week.
Last week.
And by the way, last week's episode garnered a lot of feedback.
We should keep doing that then.
I got more feedback on last week's episode than I have in...
Interesting.
I think months. So just people saying how they enjoyed the show. We have good
chemistry
together.
Good feedback?
It was all good feedback. Yeah, it was all great. You know, new listeners. Awesome. Some on Macedon said, you know, hey, really enjoyed the show. Love you guys. I mean, so yeah, great nice. Conversation last week. So
that's awesome. Cool.
And hopefully this week as well.
So. Yeah. One thing I wanted to mention to you, Tom, I don't know if you've thought of this or tried it at all, but on the forums that I do, we actually do transcripts of the entire recorded session now, and we don't publish the entire transcript yet, but you can get it obviously off of YouTube, right? So what I've done is I have a low cost marketing person who takes that stuff and distills it into some insights, and we create a blog post that's like, you know, less than 1,000 words on key stuff from it. So just thought, you know, if you want to take advantage of the automated transcript stuff, then you can actually add to your SEO maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. I've, you know, long ago I used to transcribe the episodes when I was doing kind of the solo show, but I might actually bring that back. That sounds like a good idea. I think I'll have ChatGPT do that for me.
Does your marketing person know that you refer to them as a low cost marketing person?
Yes, absolutely. That's their differentiator.
Now, to be clear, Scott works for a startup, so
I understand, and I understand why it was relevant. Right, he was offering like, "Hey, this doesn't cost that much. It's up for a pen test. We're going to put our low cost consultant on that pen test."
SEO stuff warrants low cost stuff.
Yes. Yeah. All right. Well, thanks everyone for listening, and we will talk to you again next week. Thanks for listening or watching. If you like this episode, please share it with friends and colleagues and subscribe on your favorite podcast listening app. To catch all the latest from the podcast, visit us at sharedsecurity.net. Follow us on Mastodon at Shared Security, on Twitter at SharedSec, and join our Reddit community on the Shared Security Show subreddit.